This is a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Mr. Chairman, for the opportunity to just stop by and say a few words this morning. I don't appear on any bills particularly, but just a couple of things. First off, I'd like to introduce our new court administrator, Pat Dugan, to the committee. Pat replaces D.J. Hansen, who retired, and you will probably be seeing Pat from time to time. And certainly, if the committee has any need for any information from the UJS, please feel free to contact her, and we'll attempt to provide you with what information you think you need. For the benefit of the new members of the committee, we have had a good working relationship with both the Senate and the House Judiciary Committees in the past. Obviously, we don't take positions on bills of substance, such as criminal codes and things like that, because that is your constitutional prerogative to set the policy when you pass or amend or repeal statutes. We do appear sometimes on bills that directly affect the way we do business in the court system, and do have a lobbyist who will appear, and on rare occasions I will even come up myself. That would be about all I would have, Mr. Chairman, unless there's any questions from any yourself or any member of the committee. I'd be happy to entertain any.
Any members of the committee have a question for the Justice, Chief Justice? We look forward to this session and working, and we appreciate you taking the time to come up.
Good. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Is there any other old business? Seeing none, we have three bills on the schedule today. Revise certain requirements regarding the code. Senator Turbeck Berry is called out of town, so she's got to be excused. And I have a note here to contact Representative Diedrich when this comes up. Both of those are Turbeck Berry. So let's drop down to Senate Bill 33, revise certain provisions regarding permission, to carry a concealed pistol. And if a page will come up here, I'll have him go get morning. Return appropriation. Morning.
Good morning. Chris Nelson, Secretary of State, appearing on behalf of Senate Bill 33. As you know, the Secretary of State's office is involved in the concealed weapons permit process. Individuals that wish a permit go to their local sheriff. The sheriff grants the permit and then sends that information to us, and we actually send out the hard permit card to the individual. And so that's our involvement with this. As we worked with the statutes, there's been a couple of statutes that questions have come to us from local sheriffs, and we've worked with them to try to come up with some clarifications, and that's what I'm going to present to you today. In Senate Bill 33, Section 1, deals with the actual copy of the permit application that the individual fills out. There's a statute immediately preceding this, 23-7-8.6, that prohibits the local sheriff from keeping any kind of a record or a list of people who apply for concealed weapons permits. And there's a reason for that. But there's been a concern about, well, when it prohibits them from keeping a record, can they still keep a copy of that original application so at least they know who we issued a permit to? And so what we're seeing in Section 1 here is simply an explicit exception to that prohibition on keeping a record that says, yes, Sheriff, you can keep a copy of that original application so that you know who you've done the background check on and who you've actually issued that permit to. And then Section 2 deals with the requirements for, or the qualification requirements to actually hold a permit. particularly subsection 6 that deals with the residency requirement, and just simply an attempt to try to clarify that requirement. It talks about having been a resident of the county where the application was made for at least 30 days. And the question has come up, well, if they are, you know, one of these RVers that you're going to hear more about and they simply come and get a P.O. box, does that qualify as residency? And I think the intention of this statute is to say that the person applying for that permit has to have some current nexus to that county, so the sheriff can do a proper check on them, has some ability to know who they are and that type of thing. And the existing statute says they should have been there for 30 days. And so with this, we're simply trying to clarify that we mean physically resided there 30 days. As I look at this, it almost seems to me that we should have included one additional word in this. After 30 days, I think it should have said 30 days immediately preceding the date of the application, but I'll leave that up to you if you think that word ought to be added. So that's simply what we're trying to do with those two sections. Now, I have talked to Mr. Chairman, and I do have another section that we'd like to add to this bill, an issue that came up after we pre-filed the bill. And Mr. Chairman, with your permission, if I might hand out the amendment. There is another section of pistol permit law, 23-7-10, that we are proposing simply be repealed as obsolete. And here's the situation. This particular section has been on the books probably for 100 years. And what it says is if you go in to buy a handgun and you do not have a concealed weapons permit, that the handgun seller has to fill out a form and send that form to the sheriff in your county. And what it's come to our attention, and that's it. Just send the sheriff the application to the sheriff. Nothing is done with it. It was simply a notification basically to the sheriff that somebody who doesn't have a concealed weapons permit, hadn't gone through that concealed weapons permit background check, has bought a handgun. Notification. As I said, this has been around for probably 100 years. Today, under federal law, the federal Brady Bill, where we are now as a handgun sellers are doing instant background checks. Every time somebody buys a handgun, they do an instant background check. And so that background check is done before the sale is made. The seller knows that the person purchasing it is eligible to have that handgun. There's really no purpose left in this statute in making them fill out a form and actually sending it to a county sheriff. And this came to my attention several weeks ago from a handgun seller saying, you know, we're sending this off to the sheriff, and then we're having to wait way too long for them to ever get back to us to say that we can make a sale. And my response was, well, first of all, this doesn't say anything about the sheriff approving or denying it. It doesn't have anything to do with that. It's simply a paperwork transaction. And as we delve further into it, we found that the compliance with this particular statute, frankly, across the state is pretty sketchy because there's really no purpose in it. And in visiting with sheriffs and the Sheriff's Association, they're saying, well, we're getting all this paperwork in, and it doesn't mean anything to us. We don't need to know this because that federal instant background check is in place, and so the safeguards are there to make sure that the check is done before somebody is ever given a handgun. And so this is really one of those statutes that has become obsolete because of the federal law. I'm visiting with one handgun seller. He said, you mean state government is really interested in paperwork reduction? And I said, well, in this case, I think we can do that, and it won't have any negative impacts and would be a good thing. So we're asking that this be added to the bill if you deem it appropriate. Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to answer questions either now or later, whenever you feel it.
Any questions for Mr. Nelson? Senator Heideprin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Chris, would you walk us through how the notification under the Brady Bill works? I assume the same person who would receive the paperwork under this provision would also receive notification under the Brady Bill.
If I might, Mr. Chairman, that would not be correct. The instant background check is, from what I understand, it's an electronic mechanism where the person selling the handgun can do a check through a national database. It's not a check involving any of the local sheriff's time, but it goes to a national database and a national check. And if it is approved, then the handgun seller is notified, yep, this person is legally qualified to have a handgun, you can go ahead and finish the sale. The local sheriff is not involved in that.
So the sheriff is never informed that that person is the purchaser of a handgun?
That is correct. Nor, under the current law, if you have a concealed weapons permit, the sheriff isn't notified either. This is only applying to those that don't have the permit.
Further questions, Senator Valley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Question for the Secretary. I'm going to kind of piggyback on Senator Heiderprum's. Maybe it'd be helpful if for me anyway, because since I don't have a concealed permit, if you walk me through the process. I'm assuming there's two processes. One, I can get a concealed permit, and I apply through the sheriff on that one. Otherwise, if I carry that gun openly, all I have to do is to purchase a gun. The dealer will run a background check on me, and then I have to carry that gun open to everyone. I don't have a concealed permit, but I have I'm okay to have a gun. I think that's right, but I'm not sure. Maybe go through both those processes and what the sheriff knows in
sure.
Either case.
I'd be happy to do that, and your understanding is good. First of all, a concealed weapons permit, you have to meet the qualifications, and those qualifications are found in the second section of this particular bill. You go to the sheriff of the county in which you reside, you fill out an application, and they then run the background checks that are necessary, and you don't walk out with your permit at that point. I've done the process, and you go back in a few days after they've done the background checks and make sure that you're qualified for the permit, and then they give you what's called a temporary permit at that time, and then they send the information into my office, and we issue the hard permit card, and we send that then out to the person, and that card's good for 4 years. That card does a couple of things. First, it allows you to carry that handgun in a concealed fashion. Secondly, if you go to purchase a handgun, it allows you to avoid the two-day waiting period, which is provided for elsewhere in our statute. And so there are people out there that have no intention of ever carrying a handgun concealed, but they want to be able to buy a handgun on the spot as opposed to waiting 2 days. And so the permit will do that for them. And so that's basically the process. Now, if you're buying a handgun, you go in, you have to fill out some federal paperwork indicating the gun that you are buying. That paperwork is maintained by the handgun seller, and I believe somebody told me for 20 years. I mean, it's a long time in case there's some incident and they need to go back and look at the records of the seller. The seller then does this federal instant background check to find out if there's anything in your background that would preclude you from having that handgun. And then the third thing, if you do not have that concealed weapons permit, then this particular statute kicks in and they have to fill out this additional paperwork, which is simply an application that they then, and it says within 6 hours, they have to put it in first class mail to the sheriff. As somebody indicated to me, so they sell a gun at 8:30 in the morning, they can't even wait till 5 o'clock to put it in the mail. They have to do that during the day, get it into the mail system to send it to the sheriff. And all this is a notification that so-and-so bought a handgun, but that person has already cleared the federal background checks, and so it really doesn't have a purpose in the whole process.
Senator Valley, a couple other things about that permit. Without a permit, you can have a handgun in your home or your business or carry it in the open. But if you keep it in your business or in your home, it's not required to have a permit. One other thing about to address Senator Heiderprim's question, that Brady bill is so strong and so tough that if a seller, a dealer, calls in for a background check and say that I'm trading in a gun on a new one, and it comes back that I'm not qualified, that dealer is required to keep my other gun, the one I'm trading in, and not give it back to me. So it's a very tough law. Go ahead.
I think that would conclude unless there are other questions.
Okay, well, is there... Senator Gillespie.
Quick question, Mr. Secretary. You know, it seems, if I might, Mr. Chairman, it seems to me that in South Dakota, we've always had a pretty loose definition of residency. And I just wonder, from your office, what are your thoughts about, you know, how we're going to handle some of these new issues that have come up? And are we going to see in judiciary this year some bills from you on the residency issue? And is there an easier way for us to handle this? I mean, there are lots of references to residency and most of them loose as compared to, you know, definite time periods. And I wonder what your thoughts are about that.
Thank you, and I appreciate the question. To answer it immediately, am I going to have some bill to have some omnibus definition of residency? The answer is no. But we deal with that question routinely in the elections area, and obviously that's where it arises. And you've all heard of the full-time RVers that come to South Dakota for a number of purposes and register to vote here. One of the things that really ties our hands in defining residency in the elections area is federal law. Federal law prohibits us from instituting any kind of what they call a durational residency requirement. And so we can't say, you know, you must have lived in South Dakota 10 days before you can register to vote. We just can't do that. And so in this bill, it says for residency, yes, you do have to have resided here 30 days. We can do that because it doesn't impact voting rights. But over in the elections area, we can't do that. And, of course, there are definitions for a lot of different residency things throughout the statute. But do I think we'll ever get to a single definition? I don't think so because of some of the requirements of federal law.
Further questions? Senator Edipin.
Well, this is a little unorthodox, but I have a question for Senator Teason based on his experience. This amendment cause you any heartburn at all, Senator Teason, or do you don't think that this is a big problem?
First of all, there's several reasons I wasn't a sheriff, and this is one of them. The other one is that I didn't have to run a corrections facility. But from what I know of it, no, I'm not aware that this served any purpose. I don't think Sheriff Holloway made use of that, so I'm not aware of any concerns as a result. But again, didn't do the sheriff job either. So.
Other questions? We'll act on the Amendment 33FA. Is there a motion? Or?
I would move.
Senator Gillespie moves 33FA. Is there a second? Senator Valley seconds 33FA. Those in favor of 33FA signify by saying aye. Those opposed, nay. The secretary will take the roll.
Senators Gillespie?
Aye.
Heideprim?
Aye.
Schmidt?
Aye.
Valley?
Aye.
Teason?
Aye.
Abdallah?
Aye. All right. Senate Bill 33. Is there further discussion on the bill? Senator Gillespie.
Mr. Chairman, I have an amendment on page 2, line 19. After days, I would insert immediately.
Page 2, line. After days, insert immediately. We have a motion and a second. Motion by Senator Gillespie, second by Senator Teason. On page 2 of the bill, on line 19, after days, insert immediately. Is there any discussion on that? Senator Gillespie.
Well, pretty straightforward, Mr. Chairman. Secretary Nelson indicated that that was a potential amendment. I think it clarifies that the 30 days have to be immediately preceding the application. Otherwise, hypothetically, somebody could have lived here 5 years ago for 30 days and qualified. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, is there a motion on amendment of Senator Gillespie's? Oh, that's right. On Senator Gillespie, Senator Gillespie's motion and seconded by Senator Teason. All in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The bill is amended. Now back to the original bill. Senate Bill 33. Further discussion? Any discussion? Senator Hatterprim moves to pass. Is there a second? Senator Valley. Any discussion? We have a motion and a second to do pass as amended, Senate Bill 33. Those in favor say aye. Those opposed, nay. The Secretary will take the roll.
Senators Gillespie?
Aye.
Heideprim?
Aye.
Smith?
Aye.
Trebek-Berry? Valley?
Aye.
Teason?
Aye.
Abdallah?
Aye. 6-0. Under SB 33, we'll go to the floor. Before we've got the people here to address Senate Bill 6 and 7. We have a good-looking Heideprim in the audience. Sam Heideprim's here. He's good-looking, and he's smart, and his nickname is Sam the Bull. Sam, stand up. Let's take a look at you. So the future will be all right. Huh? Pardon? Senate Bill 6, revise certain requirements.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Gillespie.
Before we get to that, Mr. Chairman, we have a pet amendment.
Amendment 33 FTA. Is there a second? Seconded by Senator Hatterprim. Title amendment on Senate Bill 33 FTA. All in favor? Is there any discussion? Those in favor of 33 FTA signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? 33A is amended. 33 is amended. Okay. Moving on to Senate Bill 6, revise certain requirements regarding the code. Senator Trebek-Berry and Doug Decker is here, and Representative Diedrich are here to testify on behalf of Senate Bill 6. Mr. Decker or Diedrich, whichever first.
Good morning, Chairman Abdullah and members of the committee. My name is Doug Decker. I am the Code Counsel for the State of South Dakota, and I staff the Code Commission. Senator Trebek-Berry has a conflict and is not here today, and she asked me to come and present this bill, and also Senate Bill 7. Senate Bill 6 is cleanup. Section 1 talks about the session laws. The LRC and the Code Commission are responsible for publishing the session laws. The overstruck language that you see in the bill required that the session laws be published and bound in split leather labels. Well, the state of South Dakota has not been binding the session laws with split leather and gold leaf since 1995. We currently do a paperback volume. And that was done, the change was made regarding the publishing of the session laws was made back in 1995. It was a cost-saving measure. It was just got to be too expensive to publish session laws in that fashion. So I'm here today to finally get the statutes to recognize what we're actually doing with the publishing of the session laws. Section 2, the Code Commission provides the legislature and each individual legislator with a copy of the code. And this is cleanup to make it clear that the individual legislators are entitled to one set of the bound volumes of the code. This is, again, a cost-saving measure. If you look at the overstruck language, it was unclear whether a legislator could request sets of the code, meaning more than one. And currently, the Code Commission provides to the legislature all of the sets of the code that you see in the committee rooms and on the floor and also within the Capitol building. We also provide to each individual legislator a copy of the code either via the internet on our website or on the CD-ROM that's loaded onto each one of your individual computers. You have a set of the code on the computer along with every Supreme Court opinion since statehood, every Attorney General's opinion that's been issued and published, and the complete set of the administrative rules. That is all available to you on your laptop today. So this is clarifying language to make sure that you're entitled to one set, one printed volume of the code, and the other. It also makes clear that the code is provided to you on other media. So these are cleanup sections, and that's the nature of the bill. I'll stand by for any questions.
Question to Mr. Decker. Thank you. Other proponents of Senate Bill 6. Any questions of Mr. Diedrich, Representative Diedrich? Thank you. Other proponents of Senate Bill 6? I was just reminded that in Senate Bill 33, there were other proponents in the room and I forgot to ask for them, but we didn't need them. Are there opponents of Senate Bill 6? Opponents of Senate Bill 6? The hearing on public hearing on Senate Bill 6 is closed for committee discussion and or action. Senator Heideprim moves to pass. Is there a second?
Second.
Senator Teason second. Any discussion? Seeing none. Those in favor of Senate Bill 6 and do pass will signify by saying aye. Those opposed, nay. The secretary will take the roll.
Senators Gillespie?
Aye.
Heideprim?
Aye.
Schmidt?
Aye.
Turbeck Berry? Valley?
Aye.
Teason?
Aye.
Abdallah?
Aye.
601.
Senate Bill 6 passed 6-0. Senator Heideprim moves consent. It's seconded by Senator Gillespie. All in favor say aye. Those opposed? Senate Bill will go to the floor. Senate Bill 6 will go to the floor on consent calendar. Senate Bill 7. Mr. Decker.
Thank you, Chairman and members of the committee. Senate Bill 7 is a routine measure that you see each year. It codifies the previous year's legislation into the code. Section 1 is a comprehensive list of all of the volumes of the code, and it shows you the date of revision for each volume. Section 2 is a transition provision to talk about when this law will take effect and not supersede any lawsuits that may be challenging the legality of the code. And Section 3 provides a timeline for the enactment of this code with the other bills that may be enacted during this session. Like I said, this is a routine measure that is before the legislature each year. It's a necessary step to codify the legislation. Thank you.
Any questions, Mr. Decker? Thank you. Other proponents of Senate Bill 7, Representative Diedrich. Any questions of Mr. Diedrich? Representative Diedrich. Seeing none, thank you. Are there other proponents of Senate Bill 6? Proponent, Senate Bill 6. Opponent, or 7, I'm sorry. Are there opponents, Senate Bill 7? Opponents, Senate Bill 7. Seeing none, the public hearing on 7 is closed for committee discussion and or action. Senator Valley.
I move to pass.
Senator Valley moves to pass. Is there a second? Senator Gillespie has a second. Any discussion? And then, those in favor of Senate Bill 7, proponents of Senate Bill 7, signify by saying aye. Those opposed, nay. The Secretary will take the roll.
Senators Gillespie.
Aye.
Heideprim.
Aye.
Schmidt.
Aye.
Turbeck Berry. Valley.
Aye.
Thiessen.
Aye.
Abdallah.
Aye. 6-0. Any further business? There's a motion to move consent on Senate Bill 7. Is there a second? Senator Valley seconds. All in favor of the consent on Senate Bill 7, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. 7 will go to the floor on consent. That does it for today's agenda. Our next judiciary meeting will be Thursday the 22nd, and we're going back to our original time at 7:45. Senator Valley, you'll probably have to stay up all night. 7:45. Any further business of the committee today? We have a motion to adjourn. Is there a second? Senator Schmidt. Seconds. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? We're adjourned. Yes.